Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to the Duck Pod, Ryan Thorburn, joined by Ken Woody. Ken, we're getting ready for, I guess, what they used to call the Civil War. Out of respect for the politically correct athletic departments at Oregon and Oregon State, I guess you got to come up with a new name, but number 9 Oregon at Oregon State this week. Are you excited about this, or is the pandemic lessened the excitement around this game?
Well, I think this is a good game to get our minds off the pandemic. And, of course, Thanksgiving helps too. But, you know, I'm just so weird to have this game not be the culmination of the season. Of course, it might be the way that coronavirus is. But to have it placed here next to with just about in the middle of the season is very unusual. And I don't know how to take it.
Yeah, I think it's still cool that they kept the traditional Thanksgiving weekend window for it. But you're right. But at the same time, Washington will wrap up the regular season, which is, you know, I guess Oregon's more competitive rival in today's landscape. Although I think Oregon State is much improved this year. Before we look ahead to that game Friday in Corvallis, let's rewind a little bit to the UCLA game. The Ducks survived 38-35. If you didn't have a dog in the hunt, so to speak, it was a really entertaining back and forth game. I thought Chip Kelly had a really good game plan on both sides of the ball, and his backup quarterback played well. They did not have Dorian Thompson-Robinson, as we talked about leading into that, due to contact tracing. Just your overall thoughts on that game.
Well, the Ducks were lucky to win. I have a friend of mine who I asked him what he thought of, and he says, you know, I watched just a couple minutes of the middle of it, and he said if it weren't for the 4 turnovers, I would have said that UCLA won by 20 points. You know, their offensive line did a really good job on Oregon's defense, and they rushed for 266 yards or so. Kelly said after the game, if you told me before the game that we would have triple the amount of yards rushing that Oregon had, and we would win. And he said the fact that we didn't win is quite a surprise. 4 big turnovers by the Bruins lead to 4 touchdowns, and Ducks were lucky to get out alive.
Yeah, I mean, you say lucky, but I remember Andy Avalos last week was being asked, why aren't you guys getting any turnovers? They had 0 turnovers in the first 2 games, and he said, we're harping on it, we're practicing it, these things come in bunches. So, you know, he was right. They get 4 of them, including the pick 6 by Jordan Happel, which was really the play of the game at the end of the half. Chip dials up a Hail Mary, Brandon Dorlus gets pressure on the quarterback, the ball pops up in the air, and Jordan Happel, who was only in there because Nick Pickett was sitting out for targeting, scores the touchdown. Without that play, I don't think they do win.
Well, absolutely. And Chip, right as he was leaving the field for halftime, said on TV, that's on me. And, you know, it was his decision, cost him the game. I mean, 6 seconds on the clock, you're going, you know, what's the worst could happen? Well, that's one of the few times Oregon got to the quarterback enough to make that pass go short of the target. And, you know, Happel, you know, figure, well, what the heck, I'll try to run it in. And there were a couple of great blocks, including one by Thibodeau, that and that turned that game around. And it's a lot different when you're ahead 24-21 than if you're behind 21-17 in the locker room after having a 14-0 lead. UCLA pretty much had that game in hand until that play.
Yeah, I asked Avalos this week if it's kind of surreal. You know, he was at Boise State as the defensive coordinator when Happel was a freshman or a redshirt freshman. And I think Happel's only previous interception was in that game off Justin Herbert. I said, is it kind of surreal that you two are reunited? And basically he won a big game for you at Oregon. And he said, it kind of is, you know, it is a tough transition. Of course, he made it easier knowing the defense, but it's kind of funny how that worked out. And he said, not only was that play big in that game, but if the whole team watches that play and how hard Brandon Dorlus worked to get to the quarterback, how Happel made the play, and then how, as you mentioned, Kayvon Thibodeau hustled downfield to make the key block, and Happel hustled at the end to beat a really good fast running back to the pylon. If the whole team plays that hard on every play, they're going to win a lot of games.
That's really true. And the turnovers, McKinley's scoop, it's really interesting how fast the defense jumps on the offensive wagon. You know, nobody stands around looking or celebrating. They all become blockers, and it's very, very impressive. I saw that last year in the Rose Bowl, a couple of turnovers, and I think even the talking heads of ESPN, Kirk Herbstreit being one of them, mentioned that, how fast the Ducks went on the offensive after they got an interception. So that part they've got really well. Tackling is another issue, although I think the guys they were trying to tackle this last week were that Felton with his little spin move. You know, I watched that replay of the game several times, and I'm looking at some of those missed tackles saying, how would you tell a guy to play that? And you just don't, you know, usually go up against guys that can do that kind of flash and dash. So I did see some good tackling, and a couple of a Felton in the open field, and those mean more than your average tackle.
Are you concerned at all with Oregon's running game, or do you think UCLA just had, you know, really good stunts, really good scheme, and they were not going to let Oregon beat them running the ball?
Well, it's weird. You know, no matter what kind of how great your running offense is, defenses can align themselves in a way to stop your run. And I think the offensive line did not have a very good push. Part of that was, and Cristobal alluded to this, there was some confusion. And to me, this is where it hurts to have your offensive coordinator on the field, because you know, I was trying to keep up with all the shifting that UCLA was doing, and it was tough. And you know, it had Shuck on his heels, and I think Moorhead was on his heels a little bit too. You know, you can spend your time trying to find schemes to block eight guys with seven or six, or you can throw the ball. And the two run pass options that went for touchdowns were against, you know, a pressure defense, and the guys they threw to, nobody covered them. So, you know, that's what you got to do to beat the blitz. You can't just block it all the time. You have to attack it, and that means get open. I don't know the kinds of routes that – it's hard on TV. You know, the view is so tight. A lot of times you can't see the secondary coverage totally, but I think that Oregon came back and played with a little more moxie. But in the fourth quarter, I saw the offensive line noticeably pick up the pace, and their pad level went down. And it's not that they were cavalier about it early in the game, but they were not at their best. And UCLA's defensive linemen were beating them to the punch, and UCLA's offensive linemen were beating the defense to the punch. So, you know, that's congratulations for UCLA, but you know, the games usually are settled on the trench, but in this case, it was out in the outer reaches where turnovers happen. And that's, you know, reminds me of the old days when the Huskies would play it terribly and then have a punt return or some big play to win the game. And it was always frustrating because you felt like you had played with them and maybe even played better. But the thing is, those turnover plays, they're part of the game too, and you better excel at them.
Yeah, and another encouraging thing for Oregon, I think, is it wasn't the usual suspects on offense, Verdell, Travis Dye, Red, Johnny Johnson. It wasn't them that were making the big plays. It was Hunter Campmoyer getting back into the lineup, the tight end, some big-time catches. He looked a lot improved catching the ball compared to last year. And then Devin Williams, the USC transfer that they've been really excited about. Mario Cristobal said he's been harder on him than any player trying to get it out of him because the talent is there and we're starting to see it.
Well, I saw in him the beginning, I guess I'd attribute it to a little bit of USC where, you know, they get a lot of highly rated stars, and sometimes on the sidelines you can see they're not really together. They're worried more about what they're doing rather than the whole team. And so I think that he had a little bit of difficulty adapting to the challenge here. It's always, you know, it's always going to be a tough thing coming into a brand new team, and they have their own way of doing things. And I'll tell you that you're coached different at Oregon than you are at USC. And it sounds like, and it looks like by his performance, that he's adjusted to that. I'll tell you what, you can't cover him one-on-one. And I would do everything I could by formation or motion to get him one-on-one with somebody. He can beat a guy who's playing zone. He can beat a guy who's playing man. And he does that because he gets the defensive back's feet turned. And I don't see a lot of this with college receivers, actually even some of the pros. You know, if they're fast, they just try to outrun somebody. And then it comes to the point, outjump them. Well, Williams can do stuff to get a step or two on any kind of route and then still outjump him if he needs to. So I think he's really a weapon, and he's a weapon I would really try to use.
Seems like the two plays that the defensive line made in this game were the ones I mentioned on the same play, Dorlus with the pressure, Kayvon Thibodeau with the block, but they have been quiet this year, and you're seeing something in their alignment that you don't like. What's going on with this defensive line that was supposed to be one of the best west of the Mississippi?
Well, last night I went back to the Rose Bowl to watch how the defensive line aligned, and they did the same thing. It was a yard off the ball. I was sitting talking to a friend of mine, Dave Walker, who plays nose guard back in my day, and he also coached at Oregon, and he coached defensive line many years, and he was commenting that, you know, Thibodeau, you put him nose up on a offensive tackle, and he's going to beat that guy every time. If you give him – if he's a yard off the ball, that gives the offensive lineman some time, which is space, between him and Thibodeau where he can gauge his reaction and block him a little better. So I don't know. I just – that's something I'd love to be able to talk to the coaches about. But why do you do that? It just looks to me and to Coach Walker – that's hurting them a little bit. They don't get a push from their defensive line like they could. And that was his observation. And I kind of see the same thing. And as I said, they have a reason for being there, and whatever it is, it's not reflected in amount of sacks. The thing I don't like is, I don't care so much about sacks, but what I care about are deflected passes. And that's the one thing that Sewell did before he got injured on the pass that he's going to his left, and he's got the quarterbacks out of the pass protection, and he puts his arm to throw, and Sewell jumps up. And the guy immediately has to put the ball down, and then Sewell lands on top of him and sacks him. But defensive linemen are so much into sacks, they forget how important just having your hands up are. If you get them up in front of a quarterback, and particularly this one at UCLA, who was only 5'10", I think, a lot of times they have to change the trajectory of their pass. You do that, all of a sudden, there are more guys in the secondary that are going to be in a position to get to the pass, and maybe he'll overthrow it, and a safety's going to pick it off. So that's all I have to say about that.
I saw a still photograph of probably the play you're talking about where Sewell appears to have about a 48-inch vertical in addition to everything else he does up in the air trying to get that. It was like he had a jetpack on. Speaking of
Sewell. I know. It was.
Have you ever seen a guy
and that just
up for an injury where it looks like his leg is broken or his knee is ACL'd and it's just excruciating pain? The cart comes out, the whole team is somber, and then 2 days later he's at practice, practicing, quote, normal. This guy might be superhuman.
Well, his 48-inch jump reach. I mean, it was as if he jumped on a trampoline and got up there. But that speaks to the great athlete that he is. And that's why he's having such an impact so quickly. He's got two of the team's four sacks. And I might say that there no defensive lineman has a sack so far. So if they can't get to the quarterback, get your hands up and start deflecting some passes, because those guys behind them really need it more than ever. You know, I was watching Breeze and Holland against Wisconsin, and you could see those guys are all-stars. And they may have some all-stars in the secondary right now, but they aren't quite at that level yet.
So just to put a bow on the UCLA game, do you give Chip Kelly and the Bruins credit? Do you think they're dramatically improved, or do you think Oregon just didn't have it the other night?
Well, you know, UCLA has always had talent. I watched them against Cal, and they looked really good. They've cut their penalties. They've cut, well, until this game, they had cut their turnovers. But some of the turnovers, against the Ducks were not because they made foolish plays. It just, you know, a hard hit and a fumble happens. That happened twice. So I think Chip had Oregon's number, and they played a heck of a game, and they are much improved. I give UCLA a chance to beat anybody they play from here on out, and that includes USC.
All right. Well, looking ahead to the Platypus Bowl or whatever you want to call it, on paper, Oregon is the big favorite. They're number 9 in the AP poll. They're the Pac-12's best chance to sneak into the playoffs somehow at the end of the year. But I tell you what, Oregon State, they weren't really ready to play in the opener against Washington State. They rallied late in that game and nearly pulled the comeback off. But they really, you could argue, the chain gang screwed them up in Washington, or they had a real shot at beating the Huskies. And then last week they took it to Cal. This is a much improved team. This would make Jonathan Smith's year to win this game, and I think they're gonna be in this game. Just your early thoughts on the matchup.
Well, it's definitely what do you call it? A trap game. The Beaver game has always been a trap game, and a lot of that is Oregon State generally has more players from the state of Oregon on their team, and in that way, they care more about – there's more guys with a deep care for the game than Oregon has. Second of all, my observation through the years is that for an Oregon player to really appreciate – we'll call it the War of Southern Suppression. For them to really appreciate how important that game is, you got to lose one. And you, when you lose to the Beavers, it hits you right in the gut about what this game means. And so if you've had your way with them a couple years, there's some players that have not ever lost to the Beavers and don't know what that feels like. And having gone 0-4 in my career against them, I'll tell you, it gets worse as as they mount up. So they've got a quarterback who can throw. They got the best running back in Jamar Jefferson. Their defense, they've got a linebacker who's awesome. His name starts with an S, Spieth, something like that. I think, made a freshman all.
They have at least
three. Yeah, he's a freshman All-American last year.
They have at least three linebackers that are awesome. Hamilcar Rashad, Avery Roberts, Omar Spates. I mean, they have a really good linebacking core. And you mentioned Jamar Jefferson. That'll be interesting because C.J. Verdell and Travis Dye have combined for 527 yards rushing in this game the last 2 years. Oregon has won the line of scrimmage, obviously. But Jamar Jefferson, this will be his third meeting with Oregon, and he's really blossoming into maybe the MVP of the Pac-12. Is it as simple to say whichever team, whichever coach gets their running game going like we thought last week, which proved to be false, will win this game?
I would say that the losing team will get under 150 yards rushing. And both teams are capable of getting over 200. So I think that Oregon has a deeper talent. I'm not sure. I think the Oregon secondary I would rate ahead of the Beavers, but as you say, the linebackers are solid and their defensive line is quite good. And the offensive line, although not deep, has been pretty effective. They got screwed up in Seattle, and it's just unfortunate that spots can't be reviewed, because even the guys on TV said there's something wrong here. I saw it, and the guy who spotted the ball spotted it at least, I would say, 24 inches short of where it was at the least. So, and they had a goal line stand down at the other end to keep the Huskies out. So, you know, the Huskies showed that they're pretty good last week. Oregon State played them nose to nose, got way behind, and then came close, brought it together at halftime, and it's going to be a tough game. And I'll tell you where Oregon has an Achilles heel right now, and it's field goal kicking. Camden Lewis is 1-4. He missed a 23-yarder against UCLA, and that's like you or I missing a 12-inch putt, except there's not – it's just a straight line between where you kick and where it goes through the goalpost. So he got off to a start like this last year and kind of, got it together. But this is all conference games. You don't have like three games to warm up and get the kinks out. And Mario, what's interesting, when he first got here, he would never go for field goals. Now he's going for them all the time. And I think there are a lot of people say, well, let's go for it instead. It's just, it's really a morale downer to, you're kicking, the ball is being placed on the 13-yard line. And you miss, that's terrible. So I hope the game doesn't come down to a kick. If it does, I hope that Lewis has ironed his deal out. But I think it's going to be a hell of a game.
I think he made his 23 yarder. He missed a 43 yarder, if I'm not mistaken.
But, oh, that's right. That's right.
Still 43 yards for a Power 5 kicker, it's about concentration. It's not about the distance. So Camden definitely has some issues. Henry Cattleman, walk-on, will be challenge him in practice. But if I were Oregon, I'd be going for it on fourth down anywhere, over, unless it's, in that 20 to 30-yard range. So that'll be interesting. As you mentioned, the psychology of when you lose to Oregon State, Oregon has won 11 of the last 12 meetings. They've averaged 45.3 points per game in those 12 meetings. They've averaged a 20.2 margin of victory in those meetings. But yet the one loss was the straw that broke Mark Helfrich's back. When you consider that he had a young baby-faced Justin Herbert on his side, and he was coaching against Gary Anderson, who since that day has been an absolute disaster as a football coach.
Well, you're right. And the irony was that game was close going into the fourth quarter, and Oregon State totally dominated Oregon in the fourth quarter. They drove the ball, running the ball right over them. And it was maddening because it was raining and windy, and the Beavers were not wearing their capes. They made fun of the Ducks because they had to be wearing capes when the weather got bad. And so they really took it to Oregon. And, you know, it's bad enough losing to them. It's worse when they run over you to victory. So, yeah, that's a tough one. I still have bad memories about that.
Yeah, I think Oregon could really use a Brady Breeze this week, just because he could speak to redshirting that year and watching that from the sideline and knowing what that felt like. Now they have Camp Moyer and a couple fifth-year seniors that remember that, but not too many of those guys. I asked Mario, because one amazing thing about Oregon that I think fans should be excited about is they have 110 guys on the roster. 81 of them are sophomores, redshirt freshmen, or freshmen. So they're the youngest team in the country, and they're the number 9 team in the country. But I asked Mario, with so many guys that have not even played in this game, do you worry at all? Do you mention the rivalry? Do you try and educate them, or do you just let them experience it? And he said, no. That would be a big mistake not to preach about this, because they need to know that if you're not ready for Oregon State, they would love nothing more than to upset Oregon's run at the Pac-12 championship.
Well, that's right. And it's, again, the observation is I really think this game often means more to Oregon State, just because, you know, a lot of times it makes their season. It's their bowl game. But I think also it is because they got a lot of Oregon guys. And, you know, there was a time when Oregon State won 8 in a row. And, boy, things were down everywhere. And the thing that will be interesting, if this was going to be a packed house, I think it would really help Oregon State. You know, the crowd getting them fired up and the chainsaw going and everything. I got a look at some statistics today. The average crowd for a Pac-12 game this year is 85. And so the Beavers are not going to have a big crowd to inspire them. The game itself is going to come down to the game itself. So that puts it solely on the shoulders of Oregon that, you know, you want to win it. You better win the line of scrimmage, and you better pay attention and keep track of the ball. Turnovers could be a decider too. I mean, it's a nice day today, but Friday, who knows? They call it Black Friday, by the way, and that's a little bit of a negative, because black is Oregon State's color. So I'd like to make it a Green Friday.
Well, Oregon had black uniforms last week. So before the season started, obviously I thought the road trip to Cal would be the landmine. You know, Cal was supposed to be good this year. COVID has totally wrecked their season. They're a mess, frankly. You know, they might get it in order before Oregon and give Oregon a game. But I think this is the landmine now, this Oregon State road game. But I think the UCLA game is going to be a blessing in disguise for Oregon. I think they're not happy with the way they played. I think they're not happy that they're not making statements that the playoff selection committee is going to pay attention to. So I think they'll be ready to play, and I think they'll win a close game, you know, like a 38-27, 38-30 type of game.
You're asking for my prediction?
Yeah, let's hear it.
I'll say 27-21.
Beavers?
No.
Okay.
Ducks? No. I would just say this to the Oregon guys. If you think that you can walk out on the field and think that you're automatically better than UCLA, they're mistaken. UCLA has a lot of skill and talent, and in some areas where Oregon doesn't have it. So I would, you know, if I knew a player that was expressing that, I would try to bring them down to earth, because Oregon has to play well to win. They cannot go out and play lousy. I mean, they played pretty good against UCLA. UCLA's a good team. Cal is not. And one of the reasons they aren't is the city of Berkeley, then their mayor, and the limitations they had about limiting the size of guys, the amount of guys who could practice. They couldn't go against each other, you know, because you could spread germs that way. So they went against tackling, you know, blocking dummies. So that's one reason why they look so bad in their first game. Oh, by the way, you're going to play UCLA Sunday morning. That didn't help either. So if the Ducks can win this one and they look at Cal, I would not let them watch the film of the first game, because that's not Cal.
All right. Well, we'll get to that next week, but it should be a fun one on Friday. And, you know, I'm looking forward to it. Like I said, I'm glad they're playing it in the traditional window and that we'll have, you know, a number of games, knock on wood, after that. So make sure you check out all the coverage at registerguard.com. And thanks for tuning in, everybody.